today's community conversation brought to you by Floyd County Medical Center. But first, good morning, Kate Winkleman.
Good morning, Chris Berg. Happy Monday.
Monday.
Monday in August. Craziness.
It is, you know, just like that. School's going to begin here later on this month. Of course, some parents are excited about that. We do have
darn.
Mayor Monday today, Dean Andrews in studio, Cheryl City Mayor. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning to you both.
How goes it?
Well, good, good. I'm one of the strange people that kind of likes warm weather. So,
I'm with you.
I was playing pickleball last night, and it was just, I was a sweaty mess when I was done, but it was fun.
Well, get ready for the cool down beginning tomorrow. Well, I guess tonight, with lows in the low 60s and highs only in the low 70s tomorrow. That's going to be quite chilly when we get soaked with the fire hose, Kay Winkleman, and
that's
National Night Out. So what are we talking about, Mr. Mayor?
Well, we had a couple groups of visitors in town here in the last couple weeks, and it was kind of interesting. We first had Debbie Durham. Debbie's the director of the Iowa Economic Development Authority, and she's also the director of the Iowa Finance Authority. And so she was in town to kind of look at housing things. Along with her was, as they call him, Jimmy T. We all know him as Jim Thompson when he used to live in Charles City many years ago, and Jim and I were on the city council together, but he was along with her. And then also their policy director was along with that group of three. So they the Iowa Finance Authority is the one who gives out the tax credits that we were able to use as a thriving community. And so she was certainly interested to see what was going on with our low-income housing tax credit project, the Commonwealth project out by the industrial park. And one of her comments was, you know, we want to make sure that people who work in our community, no matter what their level of job is, that they have a good, safe place to live. And that's what this low-income housing tax credits is all about. It's, you know, some people poo-poo it because it's low-income housing. Well, this is affordable housing. This is for people, like I say, who work in our community. She brought up, you know, they're paraeducators. They're, you know, maybe x-ray techs at the hospital. Maybe they're, you know, the people who check out your groceries at the grocery store. And you know, she made a big emphasis on saying, you know, all people need some place that they can live. And this, so she was very happy with this project. We also then on the opposite end toured the Rottinghouse project, the Sherman Creek project, which are high-end townhomes over by Sherman Creek. And you know, they're looking at a totally different population, but again, that's something our community needs. That's what we stressed with her, is that, you know, we need all types of housing in Charles City. We need the high end, we need the low end, we need the middle. And so it was really nice for her to come up here and share her thoughts. One of the things that we talked about was, you know, the market rate housing tax credits that we have. Also, in addition to the low-income housing tax credits, those are set to expire after 1 year, which is now. And we talked about, you know, that those people are so busy doing projects around the state that they can't put together a project in 1 year. And could we maybe get that tax credit extension for the market rate housing? And she said, yeah, I think we can get that done. So that was a plus to having her here. We also toured the middle school. Sean Fouch was up here, who is the owner of the old middle school and is doing work in there. It was great to see the progress that he's done in there. They pretty much are done. We only saw the first floor. We didn't go up on the second floor. But on the first floor, they're pretty much done with the, as you call it, deconstruction, taking out asbestos, taking out some dropped ceilings, just different things. And actually in one area, they kind of had the framing for what a two-bedroom apartment might look like in that facility. So that was really great to be able to see that. One of the things he's really holding his project back is he's applying for state historic tax credits. And he said the problem is that the state historic tax office really loves that middle school building. He said they think that there's, you know, this is a really cool, really strongly built building. And so they have a lot of requirements on him. It's like, well, you can do this, but you can't do this. You can't do this, you can't do this. So right now, they're still negotiating, I guess, with him. And so that's what he said. You know, we've done about all we can do at this point without getting those tax credits, because that'll then give us much more money to work with. Because then what they do is they get these tax credits, they sell them on the market, and then the profit from selling those tax credits they use to work on their project. And so again, like I said, Debbie Durham, she isn't in charge of the state historic tax credit area, but they're in the same office. And she said, well, let me see if I can check and see what's going on there. So, you know, it's always nice to have friends in high places that can maybe, you know, maybe if not do something for you, but at least can check into something and find out what the whole story is. So,
sure.
Okay. What else you got?
Just keep talking, huh?
We so, don't have a listen
for us. So our other group then was came last week, and that was Cading Properties. And Cading Properties is a property management group out of the Urbandale area. And their chief CEO was one of the, they had a group of about seven of them who came up, and they're doing what they call a hometown tour. They've always done most of their work around the Des Moines area because that's kind of where they're based. They're looking to spread out more in the state, and so they picked, we applied to them to be on their hometown tour, and they picked five cities around the state. I think it's Oskaloosa, Corydon, Cherokee, ourselves, and Nevada were the five communities that they are touring. And they had been to Oskaloosa already, and we were the second community. And what they do is they come in and they build usually like four or six plexes. I knew that they were multifamily more so than single family. They do some single family, but their emphasis is multifamily. But I was thinking they did like, you know, 40 apartment units, but they don't really do that. They do like four units that are attached, but each unit has its own entry, each unit has its own garage. And so they're more like single family houses. They're just kind of attached to each other, and there'll be like either four or six of those together. And so we kind of are hoping that they would be the market rate. You know, when I talked earlier about the market rate tax credits that we also had, that's what they would be. They come in and do things that are just put on the market for at market rate. They aren't low income, but they aren't the real high income, and they're all rentals. They're in the rental business, the property management business. So they build them and they continue to own them long term. And so they have, you know, that to us as the city, that was a plus, because it's the company that's building them is also going to be the managers. And so I think that leads to you having better long-term upkeep on facilities like that, because they have a reputation throughout the state, and they don't want to tarnish that reputation, and so they're very aware of maintaining the quality of the units also. So we showed them some areas. I think you're aware that we're doing some trading with the hospital. We're going to close part of 13th Avenue between the hospital and the clinic after we build the extension of 13th Avenue out to Corporate Drive. So we will give that section to the hospital because they want to make that part of their campus. But in return, we get about a 7-acre area on 11th Street right across from the homes that are already on 11th Street, which would be a perfect place for, you know, these four and six plexes or single family housing. So we showed them that area. We showed them the area that we were looking at before with the low income housing out on 18th Avenue across from, as you go out North Grand on that property. The residents out there were not excited about having a 40 unit complex out there, but these four and six unit facilities would work really well in that area. So we showed them that property. We showed them some other properties in town of, you know, what's available, what has been done. We showed them the Allied subdivision. That's probably our newest subdivision. And then we also showed them the twin homes out at Parkside. So they got a chance to kind of see what the housing areas are like in Charles City. They went to the Rotting House, Sherman Creek, and kind of got a tour there. So they can see what we have available in Charles City, but also what's missing in Charles City and what maybe they could add to our community. So I thought it was two really good visits that we had from these two groups, because, you know, some people, I know when we were looking at the low income housing, people were saying, well, why do we don't need more housing in Charles City? Well, yeah, we do, because we had a panel with the Cading group. We had a panel, one person from Zoetis, one person from Valero, a school person, one person from Pure Prairie Poultry. as a panel of employers in town and let them tell us what they're seeing, how many of their people live in Charles City, how many of their people would like to live in Charles City but can't find what they're looking for, how many of their people would like to do rentals to start off with as opposed to purchase. And it was brought up even that, you know, not just in Charles City, but a lot of the younger folk, you know, it's easy for me to say because I'm not a younger folk, but people in the 20 to 40 year age category, they're looking to rent. They don't, you know, those, you know, when I bought a house, I want a nice yard. I want a place for my garden. I want to do this. I want to do that. But a lot of these people, they want a place to move in, and they're involved with their kids. They're involved with other things. They don't really care about mowing the lawn and things like that. They want a rental property to start, at least to start off with. And so that's really important that we upgrade our rental stock in Charles City, because again, that's what these employers are telling us. They have people that are moving to Charles City and they are looking for rentals, but they can't find what they're looking at. Either they can't find anything, or some of the properties they find, they say, well, no, I don't want to live in an old three-bedroom house. I want something that's up to date and I can move right in. I don't have to do work on it and things like that. So yeah, we do have a housing shortage in Charles City, and we're trying to address that because we'd like our employers and their employees to be able to live in town as opposed to commuting from Waverly, Mason City, Cedar Falls, you know, you name it. I think they would like to live here. That not only does that make it easier for them, but it makes them feel a part of our community, and that's what we're looking for. People that work here, but they feel like this is their hometown too. So they're gonna be on the library board or the, you know, members of the YMCA and different things like that, as opposed to working their 8 hours and hightailing it out of town.
Driving away, definitely. So let's get an update on the Main Street construction here in downtown Charles City. Construction here in the 500 blocks largely complete as of right now. I'm saying as of right now because work's about to pick up. Talk about that.
Yeah, we had representative from Veenstra and Kim, who is the engineering group that's kind of overseeing the project, and he was at City Council couple weeks ago, because I guess we have a meeting tonight. So that was 2 weeks ago, he was there and just gave us an update on what's going on. They've had some concerns in some areas that, you know, maybe the workmanship wasn't as good as what it could have been. He agreed with that. He said part of that was the work we were doing right before the 4th of July, because we wanted to get that work done so that we didn't disrupt the parade and different things like that. And so he said we didn't have the time to do it like we'd like to. And so some of those areas will be improved upon, but those are very few areas. As a whole, the project's going really well. They're on schedule, if maybe not even a little bit ahead of schedule. What he was telling us, the new street up by North Grand, that one block, they're planning on paving that sometime in the middle of August, and we're in August, so, you know, hopefully pretty soon that, and then once that's paved, that will be opened up, which will make it much nicer. Right now, you know, you get up there by Pure Prairie Poultry and you kind of have to wind around to find North Grand again. But this will be a really nice improvement up there. Not only will it allow Pure Prairie Poultry to be successful in their business, but it's going to give us, I think, a much nicer intersection with North Grand up there. You know, where before you had to pull up and kind of look back over your shoulder to see what's coming, now it's going to be a 90-degree angle. And you can see by the curbs that they've done up there already, it's going to look a lot more like a street now. You know, before it looked like a parking lot that had some painted lines on it. So, yeah, this will be nice to have it look like a real street, and it'll be much nicer for people using that area. So they're talking about paving that probably the mid-August. By the time they get all that, they're still doing curb, like you say, your section's pretty much done with the curb, the gutter, the sidewalks, but they still have a few blocks to go. And they're talking about that's probably going to be mid-September before they get all of the curb and gutter and sidewalk work done. And then they'll come in and they'll pave one lane of Main Street, the whole length of from all the way from the courthouse up to North Grand, and that'll take about a week. So traffic will still be able to function on Main Street because it'll be just one half of the street being paved. So there'll still be two lanes if you count the parking lane and the travel lane. So there still will be two-way traffic on Main Street. Once that one side of the street is done, they'll come back the next week and do the other side. So it's a 2-week process, 1 week for each lane. But they like that because they're going to be able, it's much, the original plan was they were going to come in and do like work on the sidewalks and then pave that section, that three, you know, 2 or 3 block section, then move on, do work on the sidewalks, pave that section. Well, that overlay being now that they're going to do the whole length, they said it's a much better quality product because you don't have the seams of what you did one time, and then you come in 3 weeks later and do another and try to make those two seams attached to each other. It's much easier to, much better to do the whole length at one time. So I think that's going to work. It's going to be, I think it's going to work out, be less disruptive to our community, but it's also going to give us a better product. So yeah, it'll be cool to see the whole end result because we've been putting up with this, I would say, for the whole summer. But on the other hand, I think the putting up has been pretty easy. They've really done a nice job. And we mentioned that the other night, that the council people said, you know, I've heard way more compliments on you guys than I have heard people complaining. So, you know, good for you to look out for our community while you're doing this project. And you go out here and watch these workers working. They're out at like 6 or 6:30 in the morning, and they're here till 6 or 7 at night. They're just doing a great, you know, they're really working at it and doing a great job. So we have nothing but I mean, obviously there's always something that didn't go exactly right, but for, you know, the majority of their work, we have nothing but compliments for how they've handled this project.
Plus the outreach, they give us weekly updates on everything they've done and everything that's going to happen in the next few weeks. Yeah, so, I mean, as media, we appreciate that too.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about Main Street Bridge, because that was part of the plan before the flooding hit, was Main Street Bridge would be repaved. That's not the case now, right?
Right. We're not going to resurface the bridge now. For two reasons. Number one, the equipment that does the resurfacing is very heavy. And as you know, we now have some weight restrictions on the bridge. As a matter of fact, we're going to have even further restrictions because it's not going to be a truck route anymore, just because it's hard to, you know, if you see this truck going across, well, is that way too much? Or this truck, well, maybe that one's okay. It's not going to be part of a truck route. So that means that there's going to be a lot of vehicles that cannot go across the Main Street Bridge unless they're delivering to somebody right there. But where was I going with this? What was your question again, Chris?
Is Main Street Bridge going to be...
Oh, yeah, Main Street Bridge. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so the equipment that does the paving is really heavy equipment. So that's one reason we're doing it. The other reason is from the reports we're getting back from the engineering group that evaluated the bridge, that bridge is probably going to need to be replaced sometime in the next 10 years. We don't know. We haven't gotten to that discussion point yet, but you know, they're telling us that, you know, yeah, that bridge is going to need to be replaced eventually. And so why do we want to put down an expensive surface on that bridge and then tear the bridge down 5 years from now? So that's the other reason. But I think the main reason is the weight of the equipment. And so we said, well, couldn't you get other equipment in here that's not as heavy? And I suppose maybe you could. But then again, then you have a lesser quality of surface because they don't have the equipment they want to have. And like I say, we're looking at what the long-term continuity of that bridge is going to be. So
is that going to be one of the main focuses in the year for the council?
I think so. Like I say, we have not sat down at a workshop and gone over the report from the engineers yet. I know they did meet with the historic preservation group because, again, that bridge is rather historic. It's over 100 years old. It has the arches and different things. And so they did meet with the historic preservation to see, you know, what their input would be. But the council themselves has not really had a report. And so, but I think that's going to be one of our points of emphasis over the next couple of years is what is the plan? You know, how do we build a new bridge? Do we build a new bridge? The advantage we have, which the flood was, you know, as they always say, a double-edged sword, it's kind of created some of the issues that we're having with the bridge. Or I shouldn't say it created. It kind of sped up the deterioration of the bridge from all the stuff during the flood hitting against the bridge, but also gave us an opportunity to look at the bridge and see what the status is. And we were fortunate that they said, yes, it needs some work, but it doesn't have to be closed down. Because if they closed that bridge down and said, you know, this bridge is in terrible shape, we got to close it down, there'd be a year where nothing would happen except for plans of how do you replace that bridge.
concerned that this become a priority,
yeah,
so that we don't have to face that. You know, all of a sudden the bridge has been deemed unsafe, period, and then if there is no plan, now what do we do?
Yeah, yeah. So we want to have that plan. That, like you say, that's the priority right now, is to decide what, you know, how are we going to do the bridge? What kind of bridge is it going to be? I remember when the cable pedestrian bridge came in. It came in two giant pieces that were built somewhere else, and they brought in two big cranes and put those pieces on that pier and hope that they met in the middle, and they did. So, you know, what kind of bridge do we build? What's it going to look like? You know, all the engineering to make it safe. We could be doing all that stuff now, yes, while the bridge is still, yes, open.
Yes. Definitely. And once that project starts, I mean, you're still looking at probably a year without a Main Street bridge.
Yeah. So, I mean, if and when it happens, and I'm not mayor anymore, because it's going to be way down the road, that it's going to be a definite, what do I say, not hazard, but inconvenience. It's going to be a definite inconvenience for a period of time because, it will definitely make it so that bridge is not, you know, we thought it was an inconvenience for 2 weeks when that bridge was closed and everybody had to go across the Brandingham Bridge. Well, 2 weeks is going to seem like a pretty short time if the next time we have to close that bridge.
That seemed like months, actually. It was only 2 weeks, but we got it. We have another bridge, and hopefully during that time we won't have another flood to close that one down, but
yes,
nonetheless.
Exactly. Yes.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I think that pretty much covered what I was going to talk about today, so I think we got it covered for this month.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Dean, for joining us as always, and we'll talk to you next month.
All right. Looking forward to it.
September.